It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nate Davis has been covering the NFL for USA Today for years now, pretty much most of this century. And he has written the other day about everybody's offseason. He graded everybody's offseason, and he gave Washington a pretty healthy grade. Nate joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today, or visit BetQL.com. Nate, thanks for the time, as always. Hope you're well. So before we get to Washington specifically, who had the best off-seasons of the 32 teams in the NFL? You had a couple of A-pluses. I think you had one A-plus, maybe. Tell everybody who had that.
Yeah, Kevin, good to be with you. I gave the A-plus to the Bears, kind of, for some obvious reasons, although I think maybe they haven't gotten enough credit for getting into position for Caleb Williams, and it's not because they were terrible last year. It's because Ryan Poles made a smart trade the year before. But people have kind of talked, and I think correctly so, that probably no number one pick has landed in such a good situation. I guess you could maybe argue Andrew Luck a few years ago, but they really set things up nicely for Caleb Williams to be a successful guy, both through their drafts, through what they did in free agency to get guys like DJ Moore in the trade last year, and Keenan Allen this year, locked up Jalen Johnson. Just have had a really good, I think, couple years, and I think the NFC North is probably going to give the AFC North a run for its money as the best division in the NFL this year, but I think the Bears have really set themselves up to possibly be a wild card team this year.
I'm trying to think. Like, what number one overall quarterback? I mean, the Andrew Luck example, I think, is the best one. But are there other examples where the number one overall QB stepped into a situation where they weren't going into a terrible team situation, but actually an advantageous situation?
Luck kind of, and there were questions about that Colts team, after the terrible year where Peyton had the neck surgery, but I don't think they were necessarily viewed as a turnkey operation. And, maybe that's a little unfair for these Bears, but I think they had a winning second half last year, finished 7-10, and then have added to that roster. And have had some decent continuity there with Matt Eberflus, who the defense has gotten consistently better, but Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Joe Burrow, Jared Goff, kind of,
yeah.
Cam Newton, Sam Bradford, obviously, kind of a familiar name in Washington since the Rams moved off the RG3 pick back in 2011 because they had Sam Bradford, but we know where that went and where that was. But Alex Smith, Eli Manning, Carson Palmer, David Carr. it's an ugly list just for over the last 2 decades.
Yeah, I mean, you really would have to go back to, 83, and it ended up being a trade. I mean, Elway getting picked one overall by the Colts, who were terrible, and would move shortly thereafter, and him getting dealt to a team in Denver that actually had some talent. Not a ton of talent, but enough. All right, so on you mentioned the NFC North might be the best division in football, more so than the AFC North. Do you still view, though, Detroit to be a sizable favorite? I mean, those are kind of the odds right now. And most odds, pick Green Bay to finish second. But do you think Chicago can make a run to 9-8, 10-7, and be a wild card team?
I do. I haven't done my record projections yet and sat down and really kind of looked at the schedule. I mean, obviously, the Detroit will have, based on the last year's numbers, they'll have the hardest one. I don't think Detroit and Green Bay are that far apart. I mean, you just look at the fact that how both teams played the 49ers pretty tough in San Francisco in the playoffs and back-to-back right. weeks in the playoffs. And then, you know, we saw what the Packers dismantled the Cowboys in that wild card round. I think the Lions had a little bit of an easier road to the NFC Championship game. But I think they're definitely 1 and 1A, wherever you want to put them. But I think the Bears do they get the last place schedule or not? But I mean, they'll certainly have an easier path to some degree than those other teams. And just given, again, you know, given the 7-10 finish, you know, they gave the Lions some really tough games, you know, in recent years. I think that they're going to have a chance. And given the way the NFC is set up, you know, I don't think anyone thinks the two teams are going to come out of the South. You know, we'll kind of see about the East, but I've got some questions as to whether or not the Cowboys are going to be back in the playoffs this year. I mean, we all know about the historical turnover in the playoffs year over year, and we're certainly going to see some new teams get in there. But I think the Bears have a legitimate shot to, like you said, get to that 9 or 10 wins, particularly, you know, given all the talent they've added and given that that's only, you know, a 2-win improvement off a team last year that didn't have what we presume is going to be possibly a generational quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, Green Bay closer to Detroit. Let's not forget they went in on Thanksgiving Day and beat the Lions, and that really kind of sparked what ended up being kind of a late season run into the postseason where they destroyed Dallas. And to your point, you know, they were just as close to knocking off the 49ers. They didn't have, you know, the lead that the Lions had in the NFC Championship game, but they were right there with the 49ers in the divisional round. We're talking to Nate Davis from USA Today. All right, tell everybody where you had the Commanders, what you graded the Commanders offseason as, and why.
Yeah, I gave them an A. And I think, you know, obviously the long existing shadow is receding now over this franchise. But I thought that, you know, given all the cap space they had, I thought Adam Peters and Dan Quinn approached free agency kind of in a measured way, which, again, Washington fans aren't necessarily used to a measured approach in free agency. But, you know, you had to spend some of that money just you know, to comply with the CBA. But I didn't feel like they overspent. They got a bunch of young players in here, a lot of players that Dan Quinn knows from Dallas that can kind of help him set that culture. I've done enough interviews and talked with Austin Eckler and Bobby Wagner both to know that I think those are going to be really good locker room guys for a young team and guys that, you know, even in the later stages of their career that I think are going to contribute nicely on the field. And then obviously, you know, I think every reason to be excited about Jaden Daniels for a team that's kicked the quarterback problem down the road for so many years now. You finally got somebody to invest in and build around. And I just think it's, you know, I think it's encouraging to see this team actually seems to have a path forward and a plan where for so many years it seems like that just didn't exist.
Were you a fan of the Quinn hiring?
I like Dan Quinn. I mean, it seems like, you know, sometimes you see these coaches get that second opportunity and leverage it. I mean, sometimes they don't. It seems like he's kind of learned from some of the things that went wrong with his time in Atlanta, which wasn't terrible. I mean, everyone looks to that Super Bowl collapse, which, you know, how much is Dan Quinn, how much is Tom Brady, how much is Kyle Shanahan? You know, I don't know, but I mean, the Falcons have been to Super Bowl twice, and he's gotten them there once. You know, those players, I think, did believe in him for most of the tenure there before the bottom fell out in the end. But I mean, I think you certainly needed a defensive makeover here. We'll see how it goes with Dan Quinn. I think you could have done worse. But I think a veteran stabilizing presence is a good thing. And I also think, you know, some way you have, and also touching on the free agency thing, you don't hire a coach primarily to hurt your rival. But I mean, they certainly have done their fair share of damage to Dallas in this offseason. So that's going to help too.
Although I like the Mike Zimmer hire. I think they got themselves a really good defensive guy. I think he's always been much more of a great defensive coordinator than a great head coach.
That could be true, but it's just interesting to me on that front that you're going to a guy with a bit of with certainly a different philosophy and a different approach than Dan Quinn in a year it looks like everybody in Dallas is on the hot seat. Mike Zimmer's going to need to hit the ground running with those guys, with a unit that lost a good chunk of its rotational depth. It's not its top guys there.
You know, you just reminded me, because we had this conversation when Quinn got hired, you know, when a lot of fans said, you're just hiring a retread coach. Well, some of the most successful coaches in the history of the game are retread coaches. Belichick, Shula, Andy Reid, Pete Carroll, Mike Shanahan, Tony Dungy. I mean, it's like the list goes on and on and on. You could probably make the case that the second chance for a coach that had, you know, a modicum of success in his first chance is actually the way to go in hiring a head coach.
I think you can argue it either way, but I mean, you said it very well. I mean, people do tend to forget sometimes that Bill Belichick was that retread, but I think it's like anybody. I mean, you know, I don't think anyone's truly prepared for that job the first time you get it. And I mean, you know, the Falcons had a great deal of success in his first 2 years. I think the Super Bowl came in his second year on the job there. And I think they were pretty good in his first year too. But I think also, just given the way that this roster is being turned over so significantly, certainly with a young quarterback, and I know that, you know, Dan Quinn isn't necessarily an offensive guy, but I think kind of having an old hand at this job is better than also having your head coach learn on the fly to some degree as well. I mean, I think a bit of a steady hand is probably a good thing for Jaden Daniels, and some of the other guys that they've got coming in. And certainly I thought that was a big component of the draft that I didn't touch on, but to draft 17 captains, I think that also tells you something about where the philosophy is going and where the character of this team is going. And I think that's all a really good thing.
We're talking to Nate Davis. Nate's done such a good job covering the league for a long time now, at by Nate Davis on X on Twitter. Real quickly, because I do want to ask you about some of the other teams in the NFC East. We've touched on Dallas a little bit. But what did you think of Jaden Daniels at number 2 overall?
Yeah, to me, he was kind of the obvious pick all along. And I mean, I know people kind of talk about, you know, he needs to learn to get out of bounds and not expose himself to some of these hits, which I think is all correct. And particularly, the people in D.C. have kind of seen the folly of quarterback that yeah. fights for that last yard and then ends up ruining his career. So, hopefully Jaden Daniels will be aware of that. And I think he will. Cliff Kingsbury, another guy that's got experience in this space, will hopefully drive that point home. But, this league is going to that dual threat quarterback. We've all seen what's happened up the road in Baltimore, how that's worked out. And I kind of buy into the notion that I think Jaden Daniels is a lot more advanced as a passer than Lamar Jackson was when he got in the league. And, you know, maybe he's not quite the dynamic runner that Lamar is, but, you know, I also don't know that's the trait that's going to sustain you over the course of your career. So I think there's plenty of reason to be excited about him. And again, you don't want to put too much on a guy, but it's interesting how his career took off when he got to LSU, kind of similar to what happened to Joe Burrow when he transferred there. And we'll see if that success translates over to the league. But I thought it was kind of the pick that they had to make, and I would have taken him over Drake May too.
All right, let's talk about the NFC East. I mean, I want to get to your – we'll start with your grades for the other teams. I actually was surprised that you had Washington at an A, and by the way, the highest grade of any of the teams in the division, because I thought Philly's offseason may have been the best in the entire league. Let's start with them. You gave Philly an A-. You included, by the way, you know, coaching changes clearly, and even front office changes, which you discussed in your write up about Washington. You know, talking about Adam Peters, but what did you make of Philly's offseason?
Yeah, I mean, pretty good, A-. I mean, probably, you know, the big thing there is you got to, you know, figure out, you know, what's your locker room going to be like, just in terms of not having Jason Kelce in there and not having Fletcher Cox in there. You know, you still have Brandon. And you still have Lane Johnson, and I have made the point that, you know, the wisdom of Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox, you know, could not avert the late season disaster that happened to them last year. But I still think something's lost there. And if nothing else, you know, you're gonna have a switch there at center with Cam Jurgens, and we'll see how quickly he adapts and how good he is at the tush push and all the other stuff. But you know, I thought it was interesting that they kind of got out of character and gave the money to Saquon Barkley, and I think it'll be interesting to see how that works for a team that's kind of just had a bunch, for the most part, guys at running back position, and you would think that's going to help Jalen Hurts. I hope that maybe they use Barkley a little bit more on the goal line than Hurts, given the punishment that he incurs in that goal line role. But I thought they had a great draft. You know, getting Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean was a 1-2 punch as anybody got in the draft. And you know, I think probably no team is better than the Eagles than paying guys ahead of time to get Devontae Smith and to get AJ Brown and Landon Dickerson and even Elliott, their kicker, done on the money front. Just kind of goes to show, you know, how differently they treat business than say the Cowboys do.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think just the Vic Fangio ad alone gives him a chance with the speed that they brought in for the secondary? Because I thought maybe more than anything else, they just were torched week in and week out with their lack of speed on the back end defensively. And they've, you know, fixed that with the draft and by bringing C.J. Gardner-Johnson back.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. You know, the defense arguably was the biggest part of the problem last year, although it wasn't great late on the offensive side either. You know, Vic Fangio certainly has plenty of pelts on his wall. I think the question there is just, and again, you know, you don't have Fletcher Cox there anymore as kind of a counterweight. You do have Graham and some other guys, but a bunch of young guys in the defense, particularly up front. And it didn't go great with Fangio in Miami. I mean, you know, Vic Fangio is going to want things, you know, his way. He's got to do it with younger guys. And you know, we'll kind of see if this works better culturally in Philly than it did in Miami. But, you know, schematically, everything would tell you that, you know, certainly it can't be worse than last year and that it ought to be pretty good with Fangio. So we'll see how that goes.
All right, the next team, you had the Giants at a B-. Am I nuts to think that the Giants could be outstanding on defense in 2024?
I don't know that you're nuts to think that, Kevin. I mean, I guess part of my concern would maybe, you know, is a team based in New York there going to have a good defense, but is it going to be constantly exposed to being on the field 35 minutes a game because of what its offense can't do, which, you know, obviously we've seen with the Jets. But, you know, I mean, having Brian Burns opposite Kayvon Thibodeau with Dexter Lawrence there up front, I mean, that should be a pretty good front there. I think they might miss Xavier McDaniel on the back end. But it could be a pretty good defense. I just kind of wonder, you know, how much help and complimentary football are they going to get off the offensive side?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, just the idea of Burns on that team with Dexter Lawrence, with Thibodeau, with a guy like Okereke, who I thought was outstanding last year, Olajari, who, you know, I think was hurt at times last year. They've got some playmakers defensively up front. All right, that leads to Dallas, who did not grade them well, nor did they deserve it. You know, pretty much everybody understands that they were in kind of salary cap constraint hell. But tell everybody what you gave Dallas and why.
Yeah, I gave them the only F, and I don't think I had anybody else. You know, I almost put another team at D. I didn't. So they kind of stood out to me as having the worst offseason. You know, briefly on the draft, I thought they took, the tackle from Oklahoma, who, you know, may or may not be ready to play left tackle, but they've already got Tyler Smith there, who played left tackle in college too, and it played pretty well in place of Tyron Smith before. So it just kind of seemed like, you know, for a team that's allegedly all in now, as Jerry Jones keeps saying, why would you take a player that can help you win immediately? You know, obviously we saw that the decision at running back was to go back to Zeke Elliott, and let's kind of see if they can piece something together there with a bunch of other guys that kind of seem like spare parts. But then the contract stuff is just kind of mind-blowing not to address, unless this is just going to be the, hey, you know, let's roll these guys out there for Mike McCarthy and see if it works this year. And if it doesn't, you know, we're going to reset our cap, you know, finally after all the years of pushing the credit card debt, you know, down the road, and try to get right for 2025 if they're going to go with an organizational reset. But, you know, it's hard to believe that, you know, CeeDee Lamb is not going to get extended eventually. You know, are they really going to let Dak Prescott go in a year? You know, they really have a plan for number two. And then even if they do get these guys done, you know, that's going to create the cap relief belatedly that they could have used to actually sign some players. So you know, it's almost like, what's the point of doing it now? So I just don't get any of what their approach has been this year.
Yeah, what is the point of not getting this done and getting these deals done so that you could have had more room with the layout of contracts with Prescott, Lamb, maybe, you know, Parsons certainly coming up as well? Is it just that Jerry was so ticked off at the end of last year with the loss to Green Bay that he didn't want to reward anybody? Look, I thought that after that loss, there was no chance McCarthy was going to be back. Why are they operating this way?
I think Jerry feels like he's kind of done this every year and paid. And you know, I kind of thought that they might. You know, I wasn't in panic mode originally with them in free agency, because I think they're usually a team that lets that first wave of free agents go by. But they usually manage to pick up a guy like a Brandon Cooks or Stephon Gilmore or somebody that can kind of come in and help and be a significant piece. But they didn't do that this year either. So Jerry has kind of used that this whole, you know, we're all in thing contextually in many different ways, but, you know, he keeps getting back to the fact that you kind of wonder if Jerry feels like he's been all in already and doesn't want to add any more and doesn't really have the flexibility to add any more, given the shambles that their cap is in. But it's tough to parse his words and what he's thinking, and obviously he controls a lot of the levers there. Like you, Kevin, I really kind of thought that they were going to pivot to Bill Belichick, which, you know, Belichick and Jerry Jones are friends. You know, otherwise, I don't see how that marriage would work either, given two guys that want so much control over the football operation. But the whole thing's pretty mysterious to me.
So, your guess, in 2025, who's Dallas's starting quarterback?
Oh, man.
Well, let me just ask it. Will Dak Prescott be the starting quarterback in 2025?
I think it depends on how he does in 2024. And it seems like he's got less around him now than he did last season. But I mean, it also seems like he's going to have the opportunity to, you know, I mean, unless they do a last minute contract, which is probably going to be, you know, based on Trevor Lawrence getting $55 million. You know, I think Dak Prescott would be well within, you know, reason to ask for 57 or 58 or whatever. I don't know if the Cowboys are going to do that. He's got the no trade clause. What's the landscape going to look like in a year or two? You know, what are teams like the Jets going to look like? Will Aaron Rodgers be there? Is he going to bow out? You know, what's the market for Dak Prescott going to look like in a year? And you know, if the Cowboys have decided that they're not going to extend him, is he willing to go back there, or is he going to want to leave? I mean, it's just such a hard question to know given how the landscape and given how much we see star quarterbacks move in the off seasons anymore. Anyway, but it kind of feels to me like right now, like maybe he's not going to be back.
All right, two more actually, real quickly on the NFC East. Do you see a step back for Dallas? Do you see Washington as a possibility to push for second in the division? Behind Philly or not?
I do think Dallas is going to step back. You know, historically we've seen that nobody repeats in the NFC East. But I mean, I just think that they're not going to be as good as they were last year, just based on personnel and uncertainty. I think you kind of hit it. I mean, I think the Eagles are probably going to win the division. And I think the Commanders really do have a chance to make some noise. I mean, we'll kind of see how quickly they adapt. And obviously that'll be contingent on how Jaden Daniels adapts, but we've seen quarterbacks, particularly dual threat guys, have pretty quick success as rookies. You know, we'll see how the defense is with Joe Witt running it. I'm not, obviously Dan Quinn will have a big hand in that, but I think you're going to see weeks where they're going to have three takeaways and a couple sacks, and you're probably going to see some weeks where they give up 35 points. But I think that this, again, another team to me, Commanders, I think that they could really compete to get to 8 or 9 wins and maybe be in on that playoff, that wild card conversation.
All right, last one for Nate Davis from USA Today. Are the 49ers going to trade Brandon Ayuk?
I don't think so. I've never thought so. I mean, to me, the main reason why is, this team, everything points to them being all in on 2024, like truly all in. I think the reason there is because, I mean, this is really the last year that you're going to pay Brock Purdy, the NFL equivalent of minimum wage. And then you've got everything else around him. You fell an extra point short of winning the Super Bowl last year. I mean, why would you trade one of your best players, and frankly, the guy that became Brock Purdy's favorite target? And particularly, why would you do it now? I mean, if you were going to trade Brandon Ayuk, I think you would have traded him to get a draft pick this year. It's much less valuable to trade him now and get a draft pick next year. That's not going to help you. Honestly, I think they're not going to be able to keep all these guys at these contracts in 2025 because Purdy's going to have to be paid. But I think, if I were John Lynch, I would pay Brandon Ayuk whenever that happens, and probably let Deebo Samuel go after the season if I've got to make a salary cap decision, which he's going to have to do. But I think Ayuk is a better match as a pass catcher for Purdy than Deebo is.
Nate, thanks as always. Really appreciate it. Hope you're well.
You too, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
Yep, Nate Davis, everybody, from USA Today. We'll do some Denton news, talk a little bit about that Caps trade when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, let's start with this Caps trade. The Caps trading Darcy Kuemper to the Kings for Pierre-Luc Dubois. I think that's how you say his last name.
I think it's Dubois. I think it's Pierre-Luc Dubois. But this is actually a pretty big trade. And the only reason I know that is we're not hockey guys, clearly. But Wyshynski and Ben Raby and all these guys, I read Wyshynski's story on this when it broke late yesterday afternoon, and he called it a stunning trade. And the reason it's a stunning trade is that Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's a center playing for the LA Kings, was just dealt last year in June from Winnipeg to Los Angeles. It was a sign and trade deal in which Dubois got an 8-year, $68 million contract extension before getting shipped off to Los Angeles. Washington's going to have, basically 7 years and like $59 million of that contract left. But he's big, he's strong, he's incredibly talented. And the other part of this is that, the Caps, when they signed Darcy Kuemper, they thought he was their goaltender of the future. Remember, they gave him a big deal back in 2022, but Charlie Lindgren's just outplayed him. And I was reading the quotes from Brian McClellan. First of all, he said, "We're thrilled to announce the addition of Pierre-Luc to the Caps organization. This acquisition brings in a talented 25-year-old with immense potential to become a top-tier center in the NHL with his size, exceptional skating, and high hockey IQ. We're confident he will thrive in our organization with increased responsibility and opportunity." And then he said about Charlie Lindgren, "After witnessing Charlie Lindgren's performance last season, we believe he deserves a chance to play a more significant role within our team." I mean, remember, the Caps traded Kuznetsov. Backstrom's pretty much done. So they have this big gaping hole at center. And Pierre-Luc Dubois is going to be the guy. And he's under contract for a long time. But I would just ask the question, why would the Kings make this big trade 1 year ago, give him this massive contract, and then trade him after 1 year? Apparently, he was a massive disappointment last year. 16 goals, just 24 points in 82 games. So, you know, he was not very good in the regular season. In their loss, first-round loss to Edmonton, he only had one goal and had a bunch of penalty minutes in five games in their loss to the Oilers, who are still alive in the Stanley Cup Finals, by the way. But that's giving up pretty quickly. Seems to me like there's something else there. Just, you know, spider senses. Like, really? You give him a $68 million 8-year deal after trading multiple players and picks a year ago, and you give up after one season? Seems like a bit of a red flag, but I'm not knowledgeable enough about this sport and these players to know for sure. But I am and have been trying to get somebody on. Actually, you know what? We're going to have Greg Wyshynski on. He's going to come on at 12:35. I was just looking at my phone to see if he had responded. He did. He'll be on at 12:35. Love to have Greg Wyshynski on. So we'll ask him if that's a red flag in this trade. But big trade for the Caps. They were one of the biggest trades, I guess, of the offseason so far. It's not the offseason technically yet. The Oilers trying to come back from 3-0 down. Game 6 tomorrow night. That crowd's, by the way, insane in Edmonton. All right, what else you got?
So you gave me a perfect segue when you say it's weird to give up after signing a guy to a big money contract after 1 year. I don't know if you're talking about Dubois or about Monty Williams, because he was fired yesterday in Detroit in the NBA.
Crazy.
5 years, $65 million contract. That's what's remaining. They signed him to a 6-year, about $78 million. He has $65 million left on his contract, and Detroit is saying, we're going to pay you to go away.
I mean, to me now, you know, he's got basically, he's going to get paid $65 million, as you said, for the next 5 years not to coach. Now, if he chooses to coach, correct me if I'm wrong, basically then the Pistons would be on the hook for the difference, but he's still going to end up getting that money. I think it's the Lakers that should be looking at Monty Williams. I've always liked Monty Williams as a coach. I love him as a person. I don't know him, but man, he's had some tragedy in his life, including losing his wife a couple of years ago. There must be something going on here, right? Like Phoenix said, good riddance. Detroit, after a year, says, see you later. So something's not right here. And who knows? I mean, with what he's been through in his life in recent years, I you know, who knows? Maybe it's that his heart's not in it like it used to be. I don't know. But that is a quick bail for sure. I mean, for a team, by the way, that is awful and doesn't have the prospect of turning it around like next year or the year after, maybe they shouldn't have hired Monty Williams this early anyway. You know, maybe they should have done what the Wizards have been doing, which is paying a lot less for coaches while they're trying to build long-term by not being very good their roster for a better day down the road. But yeah, Monty Williams, I know he's always been one of the real well-liked guys in the league, that's for sure.
What else? I was stunned by this. I was stunned when they gave him that contract to begin with, because I think, I don't know if he's much of a team builder guy versus a getting you over the hump kind of a guy. That's just the way
right.
that I view him.
No, good. You know, he's also a local.
He is, yeah.
Went to Potomac High School in PG County, Oxon Hill. He lost his wife, like, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that, in a car crash. She was killed in a car crash. It was incredibly tragic. But anyway, all right, let's move on. What do you got next?
All right, so Nats get a big win yesterday, 3-1 over the Diamondbacks. Jesse Winker hit a go-ahead, 2-run homer in the sixth inning, and Patrick Corbin looked like old Patrick Corbin. 5 innings pitched, strikes out 7, allows just 1 run on 3 hits. If we had this Patrick Corbin every single start, we wouldn't be so itching to get rid of this guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good outing for him. There's no doubt about it. That's the best way to put it. You know, he walked in the one run that gave Arizona a 1-0 lead in the fourth inning, I think it was. But for him, I mean, he's just had so many horrific games. Now, the last couple of games, so yesterday he pitched 5 innings, allowed just 3 hits, 1 earned run, struck out 7, which I think may be a season high. I think I looked at that and it was a season high for strikeouts. Still, you know, 90 pitches in 5 innings. So it's not perfect, but it's better than it's been. Although his last outing was just 1 earned run in five innings as well. But, you know, he's had the games, right? He gave up 6 earned runs in 5 innings against the Mets. He gave up 8 earned runs in a game against Minnesota. You know, 7 earned runs in a game against San Francisco. His ERA, though, has come down. You know, at one point early in the season, it was like in the eights. It's now at a season low, I think, at 5.60 after yesterday. Look, starting pitching's been the story of the national season. It was expected. They've gotten incredible starting pitching, and starting pitching is, you know, that is that answer for being a contender or having a chance to contend. It's not the end all be all, but if you don't have great starting pitching, you really don't have a chance. And they've been working on this, and they've been building this, you know, and they've been drafting this, and Josiah Gray may be a week away from coming back. I think people thought maybe it's Corbin that he replaces, if not Hers. Hers last, you know, outing had 13 strikeouts, but this team has had outstanding pitching. Kyle Finnegan, another, you know, incredible ninth. I think he struck out 2 of the 3 he faced, you know, with a 3-1 lead. Be nice to get this one today to get to 500, because they've only been 500 this year at 20-20, I think it was back in early May. And they flirted with it, you know, a few times. But they haven't been above 500 yet at any point this year. So maybe that's coming. We shall see. They need this one, and then they get Colorado over the weekend.
So I can't imagine the answer to this question is yes, but I will ask you it anyway. Did you watch the Kendrick Lamar concert yesterday?
No, I didn't, but I thought you were going to ask me something different. I thought you were going to ask me, did you see any of the Mystics Indiana game last night? And I would have answered, yes, I did.
Well, we'll get to the Mystics fever stuff, but this you have okay. to go watch at least portions of Kendrick Lamar's concert. It's on Amazon Prime, and there's also like bootleg versions of it on YouTube. It was a concert. At points, it felt like a funeral, not for him.
So what how much of it was about Drake?
Kendrick started his set with one of the many diss tracks aimed at Drake, and then they ended the set with Not Like
Us. You call
us.
That a diss track?
Euphoria is definitely a diss track, yeah.
Yeah, but is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's
is
called
that
a
the
diss
slang?
Track.
That's a diss track?
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
Yeah, so sorry. I should have prefaced with that. Yeah. We started with Euphoria, and then they played Not Like Us to end the show. Not Like Us right now is the number one song in the country, and it's going to continue to be that way. And he also played it 5 times in a row.
What?
With guys dancing on stage at the end. You know who made it on stage, who was dancing to Not Like Us? Which, if you haven't heard the song,
I've heard the song.
Main crux is calling Drake.
Who was dancing on stage with him?
DeMar DeRozan was up there.
Really?
Yeah. Which is great. DeMar's from
Compton. You know, DeMar
Compton.
DeRozan has a book out right now. Trying to get him on the show because I'm a fan of DeMar DeRozan. Huge fan of DeMar DeRozan and his story. Who else was – what else from this how do you play – it's a number one song in America. 5 times in a row?
5 times in a row. Five times in a row. Because
Where was the concert?
It was in at the Kia Forum in Inglewood.
Yeah.
So it was right. It was a lot of this was by design. There was a lot of Los Angeles rappers in the building. There was like a statement of unity at the very end where there was a member from every single section of a gang in that area coming together, which has never been done before. So it really was unifying Los Angeles, but they were dunking on
Drake.
Well,
it was part of Juneteenth, I would imagine, too, right?
It was. Yeah, that was by design. And Drake was just getting dunked on in the process. But like Russell Westbrook was there. James Harden was there. Russ was dancing on stage.
When I turned on TV this morning, I saw Russell Westbrook on stage, and I didn't know what it was from, and the sound was down. But now you've confirmed why Russell Westbrook looked so happy on stage dancing.
It was the most excited I've seen Russell Westbrook in years.
Well, he gets pretty, he's pretty, you know, he's got a lot of energy.
He gets emotional when he plays basketball. He looked happy on stage dancing. LeBron was there, too. He didn't come on stage, though.
Got it.
Now we can talk about the Mystics. They fall to the
Fever.
Well,
I mean, I was just going to say that I flipped it on briefly. I was, you know, among many different things last night. And Caitlin Clark, in another sold-out house in Indiana. This game was against the Mystics in Indianapolis. 17,000-plus, another sellout for her games. And she had a career-high 12 rebounds. She had 18 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, and 4 steals in the game. You know, one of the underrated parts of her game, and this goes for, you know, NBA players sometimes too. Like, I don't consider Caitlin Clark to be a great defender, and I'm not expert enough in her game and the WNBA game, but I think that she's not super athletic. I don't think she moves her feet great on defense. At this point, physically, she's not as strong. But what she is, because her IQ is so high, her basketball feel, you know, kind of an understanding of being kind of a step ahead of everybody else, she is so good off the ball and getting into passing lanes and getting steals. She had 4 steals last night. She's had multiple games of 4 steals this year. And a lot of times you'll see guys, NBA guys or lower-level guys, that are not great defenders on the ball. But because they have this incredible feel and basketball anticipation, and they're kind of a half step ahead in terms of what's going to happen off the ball, they end up being much better as a defender when it comes to steals. Like, they're able to see, all right, this ball's swinging, it's going to move here to the guy, the person I'm guarding, and I'm going to jump this. And she's great at that. A lot of players are. One of the greatest all time at that was Juan Dixon, who was a phenomenal college defender. By the way, did it, you know, for his few years with the Wizards too. Now, they attacked him because he was smaller and he was, you know, he had a small frame, and overall as an on-ball defender, not great, but man, off the ball, he just would see it, he'd sniff it out. And as that ball swung to the guy he was guarding, he was in that passing lane, and it was a layup on the other end. And she does that a bunch. Now, sometimes you gamble and you miss, and your player goes back door, and it's a layup against you. But you'll still end up with, you know, 4 or 5 guesses during the course of a game that turn out well for your team. But she, another sellout house. By the way, they have played. You know, everybody said the Indiana Fever is like one of the worst teams in the league. Actually, I think the Mystics are the worst team in the league. But I think they've won like 4 in a row or something like that, they were saying last night on the broadcast, or maybe it's 3 in a row. And they're now far from the worst record in the league. She's lifted them. There's no doubt. For those of you that think, oh, you know, she's just not that good at this level, she is a lock to be the rookie of the year in the WNBA. And now that completes our WNBA conversation. Do you have anything else?
That's all I got for you.
All right. Coming up at 12, we'll talk NBA draft, which is less than a week away, and the Wizards hold the number 2 overall pick. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app. So did you guys see this story yesterday about a quarterback salary cap? Denton, did you read any of that? Tom Pelissero had something about that from the NFL Network, that some owners believe that they should create a separate salary cap for the position of quarterback.
I'd heard rumblings of that. I don't think it's the worst idea in the world.
It's a terrible idea. It'll never happen. There's no way the NFLPA would ever allow a salary cap for that position. Look, it's a good... Well, let me back up. It's a great idea from the team standpoint to where you would limit it to a percentage of the overall cap. And by the way, I think from a fan standpoint, if that's what you were talking about, I agree with you. But it's never going to happen. I don't think it could happen. I just don't see the NFLPA ever setting a precedent of capping a position. You already have a cap on the team. And by the way, that cap continues to go up, and they want more revenues from the 48.5% or whatever that number is currently, especially if they add an 18th game, which I don't, that's another subject altogether. It's like the 18th game would benefit the players at their current percentage. I mean, they don't get paid for these preseason games. You eliminate a preseason game, you add a regular season game, there's going to be more money for them too. I understand the safety concerns, but they would incorporate a second bye week into that as well. I just don't see this ever having enough steam. Pelissero said one of the reasons that that he doesn't think it'll go anywhere is that you've got too many teams that have paid quarterbacks recently, and they want the other teams to have to pay their quarterbacks. You know, they want the 49ers to have to make a decision to pay Brock Purdy 20% of their cap or 18% of their cap. You know, we've got other quarterback deals that are coming down the road. Hopefully one here in 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is. I don't see that happening. I don't think that the NFLPA would allow that to happen. You know, remember, the last big, it wasn't a position cap. It was the rookie wage scale that, you know, they accepted as part of the 2011 collective bargaining agreement. But that was different. You know, curbing rookie salaries gave veteran players, vested veteran players, more of the available cap money. And I thought that was fair, and I thought that was logical. I don't think it'll ever happen with quarterbacks. But I'm assuming you love the idea because it would make the quarterback position a percentage of the cap that, you know, made it more possible to build out a really good team around a great quarterback.
That, and maybe I read this a little wrong, I've always subscribed to a theory that was first, I heard it first from Dominique Foxworth on a podcast, that said that you can allocate certain money that you would pay to quarterbacks into like a different pot so it wouldn't count against the cap. For example, like if you're paying $50 million a year for a quarterback, instead of crippling the rest of your roster, you'd be able to allocate that in a certain way, which I guess you can do now if you get creative with certain things. Essentially, it wouldn't break a team's back if they paid a quarterback at the way the prices are rising.
But then the aggregate amount of contracts, it's going to be much higher, and that'll mean less money for the owners.
Right, which they would never do. But from
no.
I'm not cashing those checks, so.
Yeah. All right, we're going to talk some NBA draft. We're less than a week away, and the Wizards have the number 2 pick. That's next.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So did you guys see this story yesterday about a quarterback salary cap? Denton, did you read any of that? Tom Pelissero had something about that from the NFL Network that some owners believe that they should create a separate salary cap for the position of quarterback.
I'd heard rumblings of that. I don't think it's the worst idea in the world.
It's a terrible idea. It'll never happen. There's no way the NFLPA would ever allow a salary cap for that position. Look, it's a good idea. Well, let me back up. It's a great idea from the team standpoint to where you would limit it to a percentage of the overall cap. And by the way, I think from a fan standpoint, if that's what you were talking about, I agree with you. But it's never going to happen. I don't think it could happen. I just don't see the NFLPA ever setting a precedent of capping a position. You already have a cap on the team. And by the way, that cap continues to go up, and they want more revenues from the 48.5% or whatever that number is currently, especially if they add an 18th game, which I don't, that's another subject altogether. It's like the 18th game would benefit the players at their current percentage. I mean, they don't get paid for these preseason games. You eliminate a preseason game, you add a regular season game, there's going to be more money for them too. I understand the safety concerns, but they would incorporate a second bye week into that as well. I just don't see this ever having enough steam. Pelissero said one of the reasons that that he doesn't think it'll go anywhere is that you've got too many teams that have paid quarterbacks recently, and they want the other teams to have to pay their quarterbacks. You know, they want the 49ers to have to make a decision to pay Brock Purdy 20% of their cap or 18% of their cap. You know, we've got other quarterback deals that are coming down the road. Hopefully one here in 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is. I don't see that happening. I don't think that the NFLPA would allow that to happen. You know, remember, the last big, it wasn't a position cap. It was the rookie wage scale that, you know, they accepted as part of the 2011 collective bargaining agreement. But that was different. You know, curbing rookie salaries gave veteran players, vested veteran players, more of the available cap money. And I thought that was fair, and I thought that was logical. I don't think it'll ever happen with quarterbacks. But I'm assuming you love the idea because it would make the quarterback position a percentage of the cap that, you know, made it more possible to build out a really good team around a great quarterback.
That, and maybe I read this a little wrong, I've always subscribed to a theory that was first, I heard it first from Dominique Foxworth on a podcast that said that you can allocate certain money that you would pay to quarterbacks into like a different pot so it wouldn't count against the cap. For example, like if you're paying $50 million a year for a quarterback, instead of crippling the rest of your roster, you'd be able to allocate that in a certain way, which I guess you can do now if you get creative with certain things. Essentially, it wouldn't break a team's back if they paid a quarterback at the way the prices are rising.
But then the aggregate amount of contracts, it's going to be much higher, and that'll mean less money for the owners.
Right, which they would never do. But from I'm not cashing those checks, so.
Yeah. All right, we're going to talk some NBA draft. We're less than a week away, and the Wizards have the number 2 pick. That's next.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And, of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.